Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I'm Tracy Hotchner. I love dogs and cats and the people who care about them. Every week, I talk with authors and experts to expand our understanding and appreciation of the animals who share our lives. To hear earlier episodes of this show and download podcasts of other Pet Talk radio shows I co-host with top veterinarians and experts, please go to RadioPetLady.com. Dog Talk is a production of Pet Media, Inc., which is solely responsible for its content. The birthplace of this show was WPPB 88.3 from Southampton, New York, and I'm proud to have been on Peconic Public Broadcasting for 575 consecutive shows over 12 years. I also produce the annual New York Dog Film Festival, sponsored by the Petco Foundation, and the annual New York Cat Film Festival, sponsored by Dr. Elsie's Precious Cat, benefiting Wynn Feline Foundation. Both festivals are traveling the country, celebrating the human-animal bond while benefiting a local animal welfare group. Learn more at dogfilmfestival.com and catfilmfestival.com. This show is brought to you with the generous support of Waruva, a family-owned pet food company whose owners want to feed their own pets and yours with ingredients that are good enough for people to eat. All the Waruva canned and pouch foods for cats and dogs come in endless varieties to satisfy even the fussiest pets and use the same care and quality ingredients as food for people. The company name exemplifies the Foreman family's embrace of rescuing animals, naming the company after their kitties. W-E for Webster, R-U for Rudy, and V-A for Vanessa. And they are passionate about good nutrition. Their Caloric Harmony dry food for dogs is formulated on the principle of how the body actually utilizes food and the quality of the protein. You'll find Waruva wherever fine natural pet foods are sold. My guests today are Jonathan Plessett, who started Pittsburgh Aviation Animal Rescue, Dr. Nancy Scanlon, Executive Director of the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association Foundation, and Karina Evans from England with her unusual product, Dog Rocks. I am back with Jonathan Plessett, who is a co-founder of the Pittsburgh Aviation Animal Rescue Team, PART, and also the president of Shadyside Inn All Suites Hotel in Pittsburgh, which has a pretty interesting way of not only welcoming pets, but welcoming new pets into people's homes through adoption. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tracy.
Well, what a cool idea you have. You're clearly a guy who's all about rescue and adoption. Before we talk about the Shadyside Inn, for those people who are passing through Pittsburgh or have family there and would rather stay in a nice hotel than in some horrible child's bedroom that's been sort of changed around for them when they're visiting family, let's talk a little bit about PART, because on the show I've had over the time pilots like yourself and your co-founder who wanted to do something really charitable with their love of flying, and you've made it into an incredibly successful way of moving animals in need of adoption and rescue from where they aren't needed to where they are wanted, right?
That's correct. It's been an incredible, we're in our seventh official year, and to date we've done about 7,500 animals, so it's a
huge
number. It's really taken off on us.
Huge number. You guys aren't flying those worrisome 727s. You have like small private planes, right? So the number of 7,500 animals means many, many, many trips to get up to that number.
Many trips. We have been using little tiny planes, but very recently, with the help of the Rachel Ray Foundation, we're taking possession of a much larger rescue plane that allow us to do 30, 40 animals in one flight.
How cool is that? Her foundation is just got the finger in the pie in so many good works, and they don't crow about it. I mean, this is the first I've heard of that. That's just fantastic.
Yeah, she leads by example.
And, yes.
When we first got this donation, our immediate reaction was, it's more than a donation. It's more than cash. She sets the example. And when we follow that example, other people are inspired as well. So it just plays down the line. She's an incredible person. We can only dream of being able to do so much. you know, good the way she does.
Nice. Well, you are doing so much good. I mean, talk about how parts started with two guys who had a plane and said, I don't know, what do you want to do this Sunday? And you've trained so many other volunteer pilots. And I always like to remind people, not that, I mean, it's great if somebody wanted to donate to PART, and I hope that the people in Pittsburgh have really embraced you. It's not really to have our hat out. It's more to, as you say, lead by example. I mean, you guys are paying for your own fuel, paying for repairs, paying for everything. It's fully volunteer, right?
It's all volunteer, and, you know, you hit upon it earlier. I mean, we were two guys who had nothing to do on a Sunday, and that's how this whole thing started. And that was, you know, as we've evolved and grown up in this world now, you know, we always hearken back to that moment, that idea that, look, you know, it can be something random, something inconsequential can lead to something so great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You have over 200 volunteers. That's 200 other people who have their own planes, but many of them have a day job and families. So figuring out the scheduling, I can imagine you need almost a professional dispatcher. How do you do that?
we do have people that act as coordinators.
Nice.
And, you know, they'll process the requests, they'll set everything up, set up the run sheets, and, you know, coordinate with the pilots, the land pilots. You know, we have a great crew, and we always like to say, you know, of all the organizations in Pittsburgh, we think we have the best volunteers. And
nice.
As a team, Pittsburgh is all about our sports. You know, we have our Pirates and our Penguins and our Steelers, and we consider ourselves the fourth team.
Oh, you know, nice.
So, you know, and people have caught on to that, and our volunteers really believe that, and, you know, it shows in the work they do.
And you think, I'm guessing, it feels like to me that your personal presence as a Pittsburghian with your co-founder, Brad Childs, and telling people, being interviewed, I'm guessing, on local TV, radio, and press, has inspired just your regular folks to jump in. You don't have to have an airplane. I mean, many of these people, as you say, are land pilots with something called a car, because the animals have to be moved from a shelter somewhere to a landing strip somewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, it takes, you know, a gigantic amount of effort to do these missions. So it isn't just the pilots. I mean, like we talked about just now, the coordinators, the amount of time spent on one mission. You could think, oh, they just moved 35 animals from point A to point B, but it took 8 hours of planning to make that happen, and maybe 10 people were involved. So, you know, yeah, you don't just need to be a pilot. There are other ways to contribute in this, and I think, you know, over time, we've inspired other people to start their own little groups.
Nice.
So, I mean, really, you know, we look at this, and it's, you know, I will never do anything in business as, you know, it'll make me as proud as I am of Pittsburgh Aviation Animal Rescue Team. I mean, it is something I wake up every day, and when we look at our Facebook page or look at our emails and see people, you know, reaching out to us, it feels so good. Nothing compares to that feeling.
You know, it's they always say that the giver in these situations may get more than the recipient, whether it's Christmas or something like this. But to those people who've done any kind of volunteering, it really is true. It's such a satisfaction when I think that many of us feel powerless and helpless and like we can't do anything for the common good. There seems to be so much common bad. So to be able to create something where people can feel empowered and satisfied and rewarded for helping someone else, it's a rare opportunity in the modern world, right?
You're absolutely right. And we see and hear about the bad things that happen in the world, but they pale in comparison to the good that's happening every day, all around us, all the time.
Yep, definitely. Give an example, if you can think of one off the top of your head, of how or when recently some group or person or shelter reached out to you. I mean, where are they located when they reach out to you, and who do you connect them with in Pittsburgh? I'm assuming you bring them from elsewhere, maybe the South, to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, our footprint really stretches along the entire East Coast and all the way to Texas.
Wow.
And parts of Florida. So, you know, when somebody calls us, you know, people always think, oh, all these animals are coming to Pittsburgh. They're not. I mean, you know, maybe 10% of animals are coming to Pittsburgh. They're going all over the place.
Nice.
We've done missions where we coordinate with other groups to bring animals from Puerto Rico, and our teams were in Florida, kind of delivering them all up the East Coast.
Wow.
So it's all over the place as far as where these animals go. We do love, obviously, when animals come to Pittsburgh because of the attention we can bring to the smaller shelters when we do these missions. You know, people might think, oh, I saw that, you know, that great dog you brought in on that flight, and I want to adopt that dog. And they go to the shelter, and they realize, wait a second, there's another dog here.
Yes.
It's been sitting in the shelter for 2 years. I'm going to take that dog. So
yeah.
You know, it does, you know, feel good to see the impact on the Pittsburgh market that we can have with these little shelters and helping them out, because they're desperate. Most of these small shelters, they need help. They need support in a lot of different ways, and we're just proud to be able to help them.
Really nice. Really nice. So you have Shadyside Inn All Suites Hotel that used to be an apartment building, and now you've made it into apartment-like in lodging, which is really great, especially for people with pets. When did you have this idea of connecting frequent stayers with you to promoting pet adoption? It's a curious bridge.
It's a curious bridge, and really what I kind of was looking at was that we have seen a pretty large uptake in people traveling with their animals.
Yep.
And at the hotel, we've always obviously been pet friendly. And maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I opened up a dog park on site on the premises. And that was a huge hit. So I realized, wow, people were, you know, coming to the hotel with their pets because, hey, I can have my pet in an apartment like location. And, oh, there's a dog park right here. And you know, all these pet amenities are in place. So what kind of really got me going with this concept was, you know, in part, you know, we're trying to empty these shelters out, and that's one way to help. And people raise money for shelters, that's another way. But what if I could just get the animals out by getting them adopted? And that really, you know, the light bulb went off, and I said, well, why couldn't I have guests do that? You're coming to Pittsburgh, you're staying for, you know, a certain amount of time. Why don't I offer to you, hey, how about the hotel? We'll pay for your adoption. Wherever you live in the country, we'll coordinate everything for you, and we'll get some of these dogs out of the shelters in a different way that connected to the hotel. And, you know, when we announced it early in the month, it was a huge hit instantaneously. You know, we've had a lot of customers already kind of itching to get involved and how can they help and how can they be a part of this. And, you know, it's just another lever to pull to try to help animals. It's a little different. But we thought, hey, why not take a stab at this?
It's, you know, it's a great idea. And people love free, which is almost hilarious because your smaller pet rescue groups can charge anywhere from $150 to $500 for a mutt because that's how they cover their costs. And lots of us who adopt from a breed rescue or no breed rescue are happy to pay that. But there are county shelters. I know one of my rescued Weimaraners, it was $12.50 from the county shelter in Southampton. It's not like it's always a ton of money. It's more the idea of being part of this big, happy idea. Now, you have to stay at 5 nights at a Shadyside Inn. So I'm curious, having gone to University of Pennsylvania, and so I can't even imagine spending 5 nights in Philadelphia, me and W.C. Fields. So what about Pittsburgh? I mean, do people stay for 5 nights in Pittsburgh? Am I an idiot who doesn't know all the fabulous reasons to stay 5 nights in Pittsburgh?
You know, it's funny. Years ago, you know, in the 90s when I was in college and I went to school in Boston, and people would say, you're from Pittsburgh. And they kind of asked, does your dad wake up and go to the steel mill? Is that what happens? And, you know, it's so far beyond that. And Pittsburgh has become this technological, you know, innovative city.
Cool.
That you'd be blown away. I mean, people who you know, come to Pittsburgh aren't just coming anymore to go to the universities or go to a Steeler game. They're actually coming as travelers.
Wow.
And, you know, the market for hotels in Pittsburgh has exploded. The last couple of years, they've built, I think, almost 3,000 new rooms
in
Pittsburgh. Because there's a giant market now for travel to Pittsburgh. The food, the culture, it is a destination now, believe it or not. And the steel mills, you know, they haven't been here since the 70s.
That's right, exactly. Unfortunately, in a sense, right, Jonathan? We kind of wish we still had steel mills in the U.S. of A., but that's a whole other story.
Right, but I mean, I you know, replacing steel mills with, you know, technology and you know, instead of using, you know, your arms, you're using your head now.
Right.
It's a different world. And I think that Pittsburgh is at the forefront of that changeover in the world.
Very nice that you were already in place as the pet-friendly place. It's not just pet-friendly like a high-rise hotel where someone charges you $50 a day or whatever for the pet, and then you know, you aren't allowed to leave them in the room, and they have to be so small, and there's just all these limitations. it seems to me that given your background as a flyer of rescue dogs, you really want to encourage people to come, and there's a dog park. There's a difference in my mind between pet friendly and pet welcoming, and I'm kind of thinking right. that the Shady Side Inn falls into the pet welcoming category.
Yes, I mean, we love it. I love walking in and seeing dogs in the lobby.
Yes.
It's fun. It's, you know, we are a cookie-cutter hotel. And I think seeing dogs on the property makes you further realize you're not in a corporate cookie-cutter.
Right,
you're in a
right.
family-owned, family-run, independent hotel. And we're going to have fun with it. We're not going to be, you know, we're not going to be boring. We'll tell you that.
Right, and not try and follow someone else's trend. Make up your own story. Do you yourself have dogs or cats?
So I have one dog. I you know, the irony of the entire thing with me and pets is I'm deathly allergic to animals.
Oh, my God.
So I have to be, I have a golden doodle that is the one dog I've ever had that I'm not allergic to.
Really? So it's true about them being hypoallergenic or whatever the funny phrase is that they use?
I think that it was easier for me to get accustomed to. For the first year, I still had some allergic reactions. And then after a certain amount of time, it kind of I built up enough tolerance to him because they're a low dander producing animal. So yeah, it is true if you can get through the beginning parts of it, which was difficult for me.
But you hung in there.
I hung in there. My dog, I like to say, you know, led me. He's 9 years old now, and when I bought him, I was a single man, and now I'm married with a child.
Nice.
He really did bridge me from. Young adult to adult.
Nice. Yeah, they can do that, right? They become our training wheels to understand, oh, we could love somebody else or something else. We could be nurturing. We could take care. We don't have to be so fiercely independent. I just want to say a quick word about Labradoodles and Golden Doodles. The thing that makes them less allergenic, have less dander, and have continuously growing hair versus fur that falls out is the poodle part, the doodle part. So, I'm a little dismayed sometimes when people are spending thousands of dollars, sometimes importing from Hello Australia, a Labradoodle. It really would be great if you guys, not you personally, you know, everyone should do what they want to do. But, you know, there's a lot of fabulous standard poodles for adoption.
Yes.
And they're purebred and they have all the qualities. You're going to know exactly what they're going to look like. They're amongst the smartest breed of dogs ever. And you add some Labrador or Golden Retriever, you actually change in some ways that brainiac ability of a poodle. So don't think you need a Labradoodle or any kind of a doodle. Just go get yourself a poodle is what I just want to always put that message out, which people don't understand. Standard poodles have gone out of favor or out of fashion, and they're sensational dogs, and many of them are for adoption like so many purebred dogs. So just saying, that is the most hyperallergenic if, as you say, you can get through the bridge part of it. So what would you like people to know or do on behalf of Pittsburgh Aviation Animal Rescue Team? Do you want them to write to you and ask how they as a pilot could start something similar in their town, wherever it is? Or do you want them to, if they're within any kind of the Eastern Seaboard, be part of one of your driving teams? What is it that you would like to do to spread the goodness?
You know, Tracy, when we first started, we really got our feet wet in 2006, and we were kind of exploring this idea,
right?
And nobody would help us. We couldn't believe that people were closed to teaching us. Well, how does this work? What do you need? What do you mean the USDA is involved? What do you do about the piloting and
right.
the fuel? Nobody helped us. So we kind of had to figure it out. But over time, we've always loved when somebody's contacted us and said,
nice.
Hey, how do I do this? I'm in
nice.
Missouri. We're an open book. We'll tell you all the secrets.
Nice.
We've made all the mistakes. We love that. So if anybody that's out there that wants to be involved, maybe they're not located anywhere near Pittsburgh, but they have a plane and they
yes.
want to learn how to do this on their own, call us. We'll be happy to walk you through the process of getting set up, what it means to be a 501c3, all that good stuff. We have the knowledge. Use us. Now, if you're near Pittsburgh, come on down.
Right.
We're always looking for people to drive, to fly, to help at the office, to clean crates. I mean, it's any other animal organization. We have a lot of volunteer positions that are open. You don't have to drive or fly.
Well, that's a really good point. And you, I imagine once in a while you need foster homes that where the dogs or cats can overnight on part of their land journey. Or maybe when they land, then they have to, you know, overnight before they go to the next place. It's a really good point about the FDA and those laws and rules about moving animals from state to state. The paperwork's in order, great. If not, you're kind of, you know, walking on some thin ice. Jonathan, it's been wonderful to talk to you. I love what you guys are doing on so many levels, and thank you for being an inspiration for others, and thanks to the Rachel Ray Foundation for putting even more wind beneath your literal wings. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and thank you for getting the word out, because this is also a part of educating the world about the good stories that are out there.
It's a pleasure. This show is made possible in part by Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, who has his own cats-only clinic in Colorado. He has devoted his life to inventing innovative litters for the health of all members of the family, dust-free litter and cat-attract litter that has herbs which draw the cats into the litter box. Now he has created healthy, dry, and canned food for kitties called Clean Protein, inspired by the protein levels found in a cat's natural prey. 90% of the protein in Clean Protein kibble and cans is animal-based, not the plant-based ingredients in most dry cat food, like grains, potato, vegetables, and fruits, which can actually increase your cat's hunger. The high biological value proteins in Clean Protein result in your cat's appetite being satisfied longer without compromising her health, making this a healthy dry food for your cat, even as a part of her diet. Dr. Nancy, welcome to the show, and I can't wait to hear what the foundation is doing on behalf of holistic veterinary medical help, because God only knows we can't get enough of that, right?
Absolutely. So what we've been doing, we've been supporting a lot of research on holistic methods, natural methods for a number of different things, including pain, cancer. We just gave an award for a study of Arnold-Chiari syndrome in Springer Spaniels, and they have some interesting things that they're going to try. This is an inherited problem. So this was a brand new one, and the other reason that I really like that one is because there's going to be a veterinary student involved. And the more that we can get vet students involved in holistic methods and holistic research as early as possible in their careers as students, and then get them out there letting the rest of the world know about it, then the better care that more vets are going to be giving their pets.
That's very inspiring, because the problem, I guess, with holistic medicine, whether it's human or animal, is that it goes a bit against the grain of the traditional medical system. In fact, in some circles, is considered kind of threatening. I don't know if that's something that you discovered or experienced early on in your own career as a veterinarian, when you found yourself leaning more in a natural, holistic direction.
Oh, it definitely was. When I first started as a holistic vet in Southern California, initially when my clients would go back to their regular vets and tell them that they were going to give these herbs, then the vets would tell them, no, don't do that, because those are going to interfere with what we're doing.
Right.
But the nice thing is that as time went on, and it took some years, they could see that I was able to do some things that they could not. So then it changed to, well, if you're going to use herbs, you should call her, because she knows the ones that are okay to use with what we're using. So, you know, their minds can get changed, but it takes a long time. You can't be confrontational, and they have to see the results themselves.
And not feel that it's going to also lose them a patient. Is that not part of the concern, that patient will be emotionally, if you will, in their minds, in the traditional Western medicine viewpoint, will be emotionally drawn to holistic, whereas it's not we don't believe it on our side of the fence. We don't believe it. And I guess that's one of the beautiful things that the foundation that you're directing is doing, is creating scientific proof for holistic modalities. And that's really important, because in human health, I've found, having, as I've now realized, so many of my formative years were spent in California. And I think that the rest of the world views a lot of Californian ideas about nutrition and supplementation and various health things as kind of wacky, cracky, all those fruits and nuts out there in California. And then little by little, it filters down through society and turns out to have all kinds of good thinking or right-minded thinking. And I think that there's that sense that you're wasting time, money, or energy if you're not doing yes. something that's chemical and costs more and maybe has more of a downside. I think that's just the way we're trained as humans, not just as pet owners. So you kind of have extra challenge, right?
Yeah, right. And the thing is, they want the proof, and that's how we're trained in vet school. You
that's
know,
right.
Is, the proof is from the research. The research goes through certain specific rigid things. And unfortunately, there are some people who try to convince veterinarians about this stuff are talking about the theory rather
right.
than the physical proof. And you know, some theories sound kind of strange, especially things like yin and yang and,
yes.
and things like that. You know?
They sound strange to the Western mind.
Yes, to the Western mind. Right, exactly. And so if you're not used to thinking about that type of theory, this makes no sense to you whatsoever. And like you say, it sounds like a bunch of fruits and nuts, you know, that are talking about these really weird stuff, and they might as well be people from Mars. You know,
right.
why should we use Martian
right.
answers for Earth problems?
Right, right, right. And also the idea that somehow it's faith-based, that believing
yes.
in holistic practice is a belief system, almost like a cult.
Yes.
And the rest of us
exactly.
haven't been brainwashed yet. When sadly, it's quite the other way around. There's so much
mm-hmm.
common sense in holistic medicine. There's so much logic. You don't have to have a study that proves it. And yet, in the medical community, be it animal or human, you do. So you do need that proof in order to keep the naysayers, quiet them down a bit, quiet down in the back. So
right,
what the how does the foundation, how do you as the executive director, how do you decide what are the best research projects being proposed?
Well, we are lucky because we have two people that have long been involved in research, including they both of them have received grants from the National Institute of Health, and
wow.
they've also been on committees that helps the National Institute of Health look over any proposals that go to them and decide
wow.
if they're good or not.
Pretty fancy.
So they know. Yeah, exactly. So they know, first of all, that they know the things that that make it a valid research thing. For example, there was one group that said, we go for holistic, humane research only. We
of
do
course.
Not, we don't want animals injured or whatever in part
right.
of this. And so part of what we require is some kind of oversight that says, okay, these animals will get humane care.
Yes.
And there was one group that applied to us, and they said, well, we own these animals, so we don't have to worry about that. No, you know. But the other good thing about our reviewers is because they've been in this, they can spot padding. And a lot of times, you know, people who apply for a grant, they apply for more because they expect you to cut it some anyway. So if we cut out the padding, then we'll get what we really want. And there are some things that sound to me kind of reasonable, or they're above our budget, but they'll say, nope, that's, you know, that's not a part of what normally gets funded. So,
interesting.
So they've helped us with the budget as well as with the methods.
And then how do you choose, or is it really random based on who proposes ideas to you? How do you choose which are the most worthy topics? Is it based in your minds on how prevalent that problem is?
Yes, that's a big part of it. How prevalent is the problem, and is there good research out there or not?
Right.
Because there are some, you know, if someone comes to me with something that's been heavily researched already, those people don't need our money.
Correct.
They've already, you know, it's been done. But there's a lot of, most of what we have given money for are things that have not been heavily researched, or that the research has been clinical stuff about, okay, did it work in a dog, but not the how does it work on the chemical basis or on the cell basis. And that's what vets want to know, so that's what we want to know it too. So that's what we fund.
Even though you may in your own experience and in your own practice have used
one
modality or
yes.
another, and you know for sure you've gotten great results,
it
just is that much more rewarding, and therefore the word can spread in a better way.
Yes.
To say, here's the study. It might, you know, a dozen beagles, a dozen goldens, whatever it may be, and this was the outcome, and here's why. There's not much people can push back when you have that kind of those kind of facts. What is this Springer issue? I guess it's not a fancy word for Springer rage. It's something else, right?
No, this is a different one, right? So this is a problem that is based on the way that the back of their skull is shaped, and the opening that where the spinal cord comes out is improperly formed in Springers, and a big part of it's because they've got that kind of the head has gotten kind of bigger and rounder and so on. So so the dogs that inherit this, they get some damage to the spinal cord, and then it causes not only pain, but often the type of damage can also cause itching that is so bad. It's an internal nerve-based itching,
my.
And they can, you know, itch holes in themselves.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and that one, this is an also, this is one of the ways that we, you know, we judge our research. They were kind of down lower on the list because, you know, it's just Springer's. It's
right.
Not something that's for all. So it was, so the methodology was fine, but our reviewers cut them down further on the list because of, you know, that factor. So what happened was I said, you know, if you can find a co-sponsor, then we could, you know, then it would kind of bump you up a little higher because we would only have to pay less.
Right.
And that's a thing, too. That means more money for other people. So it took them a while, and they finally found a co-sponsor, a group in New York that is specifically interested in that problem. So that group came up with a bunch of money, and it cut it down enough to us. So then they got bumped up. And so now, like I say, that's our latest approval.
But one would hope that what would be learned about the Springers and this congenital or genetic, not congenital, genetic defect might be of value. I'm asking this, not saying it, might be of interest or usefulness in other genetically propelled problems, or not really? It's only specific to this.
The big thing that they're looking at is how to treat it, it's a spinal damage. It's a different kind of spinal cord damage than dogs like dachshunds get, you know, from their problem. But anything that they can learn about treating any kind of injury to a spinal cord has the potential for giving us some insight into how to treat other types of spinal cord damage. So there's a possibility. We'll just kind of have to see.
So what I heard you saying, if I heard it correctly, but you were being maybe discreet about breeding practices, is that the shape of the head of the Springer Spaniel has evolved to a different shape than was originally, quote-unquote, designed, always by mankind, thank you very much, to a rounder shape, which in and of itself may be the problem. In other words, breeding choices, perhaps based on dog showing and what kind of shape of a head is given a ribbon?
Yeah. Yeah, you can see this all over the place.
I know, exactly. So, that's why I wanted to talk about all these breeds of dogs suffering, and the humans who love them suffering so mightily, as the dog show world rewards certain shapes, bigger heads, smaller heads, bigger eyes, whatever it may be, lower legs, the fact that German Shepherds in the show ring can no longer walk, trot, or canter like any normal dog can because of what the dog show world has celebrated. Is that, how does someone with the kind of high morals of a holistic veterinarian, how can you make an impact, or is it pretty impossible on these trends, if you will?
Well, one of the ways that we can is to encourage anybody who's interested in this kind of thing to, for example, if they're going to get a dog that has still has a job, you know.
Right.
Shepherds that are, for example, the Schutzhund shepherds, which are the ones that are more used for as guard dogs and
military,
that type of
thing. Right.
That's right. So they have to be in a little bit better shape physically than the other ones. So any kind of a dog that can win the show ring and be a, you know, do their job. The other example, hunting dogs. You know, the if you get Labrador retrievers, were getting really leggy and skinny.
Yes.
And, but the ones who not only can do in the show ring, but also go out and hunt in the fields all day and bring their and, you know, masters back birds or whatever, or dogs that are agility dogs. That's another one that is a possibility for, you know, for anybody who has any kind of a performance dog. Those are people who, those are the breeders that I encourage. I encourage people to go to those breeders, and I try to spread the word about this is the kind of dog you want. You know, if you're going to have the beauty contest, let's have a beauty contest with a little bit of bite to it.
Right. And but of course the real problem is that so few people have the opportunity, and many of them don't have the desire to go to a professional or responsible breeder. They want
right.
to rescue, and then they rescue from a breed specific rescue because God, I just love Springer Spaniels, without mm-hmm. the knowledge, just like the mm-hmm. Kerry Blue Terrier, which is in some ways, luckily, not a very popular dog, but those dogs mm-hmm. that were, I'm going to say this off, you know, in lay terms, dropping dead at age 9 from this genetic kidney disease that was incurable
yep.
and no one knew about. I mean, these are some of the problems mm-hmm. that it's really hard to get through to people because now you're dealing with the end result. You're dealing with
yes.
Springers. You're dealing
yes.
with Cavalier, King Charles Spaniels, and others where their brains don't fit in their skull. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
yowie, we're doing this in, mm-hmm. in very short order, right, Dr. Scanlon? I mean,
right.
in a matter of generations, manipulation
right.
of breeding can lean in these directions that cause so much heartache.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It makes you sad. Every once in a while, you do see something good happens. Sometimes the breeders of a breed will get together and eliminate a problem that
yes.
they had and that type of thing. And I'm always heartened by that. I'm very happy for people who rescue these poor guys. But the good thing about rescue agencies is generally anything that goes through there has to be spayed or neutered. So you eliminate
right.
those dogs from the breeding
right.
pool. But yeah, that it's... you know, that we can just do what we can do. And
that's
if you
right.
have a favorite breed, become vocal for, you know, for that type of thing in that breed.
I think that's really good advice. I mean, each of us can advocate for the breed that we care about or even one that we don't have a particular leaning toward, but you learn about it and you think, what can I do to make a difference? I don't know why I would think that holistic medical practitioners would be more vocal and more passionate, but I do. I do because I mm-hmm. think somehow you all are renegades and rebels in a sense because you're
yeah.
going against the tide, you know, and you're and
mm-hmm.
you stand up for something you believe in so passionately and you've seen the value of it, of practicing holistically and living with your pets holistically. So I just think it's great that the foundation exists, and I'll have a link to it for people listening so they can just learn some of the things that you're doing, and anyone who is a veterinarian and might or a vet tech and might want to lean towards holistic practice, and anyone thinking of going to vet school, it'd be great, wouldn't it, to have this sort of thinking as part of your fabric early on and not try and wrench away later, but make it be, as some of your research, as you said, has interns there, make it be part of what your mission is for wellness
right.
and prevention. So
absolutely.
I think it's great what you guys are doing, and I look forward to hearing the results of any of this research whenever you have a free moment, of which I'm sure you don't have many. It would be wonderful to hear more specifics about the work that you guys are doing. It's wonderful, and I look forward to hearing more about it. Thank you so much.
Okay. And thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I'll
be
bye-bye.
Right back after this quick word. This show is brought to you by Halo, holistic and humane natural dog and cat foods, which are made with only whole meats, never with rendered chicken meal or byproduct meal. There are new formulations at Halo which reflect whole, holistic, and humane practices. Halo says no to factory farming, no to growth hormones, no to antibiotics, no to artificial flavors, coloring, or preservatives in their foods, and sources cage-free poultry, pasture-raised beef, and wild-caught fish. The new Halo has no GMO vegetables. All fruits and vegetables are sourced from farmland that prohibits the use of genetically modified seeds. What's new about Halo will matter to you, to farm animals, and to the planet. This show is also brought to you by Best Pet RX, a unique compounding pharmacy for pets in New York City. They can turn any medication for dogs and cats into a custom-flavored oral paste, chewable tablet, or liquid. And if your pet won't take it, they'll keep making formulas at no extra charge until you get one your pet does like. So your pet can happily take the medicine she needs to get well and stay well. Best Pet RX. I am back with Karina Evans, my most wonderful new example of an incredible woman entrepreneur who has made a big splash in the pet world and with the most unusual product I've ever heard of, Dog Rocks. Karina, there you are in England, talking by the miracle of technology to us here in the USA, although you spend a good amount of time here too. When you say to people, oh yes, I invented or I created or I sold the idea of Dog Rocks, do you people think you have rocks in your head? What, they don't know what you mean, right?
I know. It's a completely nuts idea. And we thought so as well when we started using the product. But hello, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. So Dog Rocks are, in fact, a solution to a big problem. And if you've got grass and you've got dogs, you'll know it. When a dog pees on your grass, it can create these burn patches, these round, mostly circular burn, brown burn patches on your grass. So it's really unsightly if you're like me and you kind of care about your, well, I've got limited green space, but if you kind of care about your grass and your shrubs, it's a really big problem, and we have a natural solution.
Well, what's interesting for me is that I'm a big believer in, you know, maintaining your lawn naturally, and I've been talking about safer lawn use and not using pesticides and don't try to make it a perfect green carpet and you're not living on a golf course. But that doesn't change the fact that, and I live in Vermont where there aren't even sprinkler systems, right? So you just depend on nature. It's one thing for it to be, you know, not perfectly green and lush. It's another thing to see these horrible big yellow and then brown dead spots. And I have two big females who seem to make rather a lot of lakes many times in a day. And I'm out there with my little scrapey tool trying to get it up and then rinse off the ground and then put down some theory or another that's supposed to help and then more grass seed and then water it. And it's a constant battle. So the fact that you found these rocks that the dogs go in their water and drink and suddenly there aren't burn marks, nobody would really understand this. It's not a chemical or a medicine that you put in the water.
It's it is a difficult concept to understand to begin with. I mean, in the UK, which is where I'm currently at the moment, it's very much a household name. And in fact, we've got the whole of the UK, Meghan Markle's new family, their dogs use our products. So, you know, it is a difficult concept to get your head around to begin with. But once you start using them, you won't look back. And really, for me, there are two reasons why it's a great product. First of all, it's convenient and it's natural. So I don't have to bend down. I don't have to give my dog a pill. I don't have to follow my dog around all day with a watering can to dilute their urine. So there's a big convenience factor there. I've got a bad back and, you know, I don't know when this bad back's going to go away. I guess it's because I'm getting older. But, you know, I don't want to have to be wrestling with my pet or bending down, reseeding. And then the other thing is that it's a natural product. So it helps us to enjoy our outside space and our pets together. And I'm all into natural, and my kids have, you know, toothpaste that doesn't have an impact on the environment. We try not to use plastic bags or plastic packaging. You know, I try to do as much as I can by not, you know, making too much of an impact on the environment. And I know that might sound a bit hippie, but it's more prevalent nowadays. And natural products really, really matter to us as a family. And that's, you know, pretty much how we got into selling it. And I love selling it because the feedback we get is fantastic. And I get to meet millions, well, not millions, but I get to meet very many dog owners.
But let's back up a minute. It's like, okay, fine. Yeah, great. She's really enthusiastic about her product, and isn't it swell? But what is it? I mean, that's the thing that's really strange. I met you recently, and you said, here, have a bag of dog rocks. Because I'd heard about it, and I've been fascinated by it. And I like so many people, even I, had thought, well, yeah, I guess. But I wasn't totally convinced, and I didn't go on the impulse to try and not have a lot of yellow and brown patches on my lawn. So you said, well, you've got these two big dogs. Better take two bags. And so I brought them home and I opened them up, and they each have these three kind of lava-looking blackish rocks in them, which it says are just natural rocks. And I put the three in each of their two very gigantic water bowls. They run a lot. They drink a lot. And it said on the package, 3 to 5 weeks, you'll see that when your dogs pee, they don't make a big yellow spot. Can you explain what these rocks are? It sort of feels like kryptonite or something. And people come in the house and say,
why have you got rocks in your water bowl?
Why have you got rocks in? Did your dog bring rocks indoors and place them in her water bowl? How clever she is. I said, no, this is to fix her pee. So explain what the rocks are.
For sure. So you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said volcanic. They are a volcanic rock. They're a rock from a particular area in Australia, and it's a porous rock, and it acts like a filter. It takes out of the water some of the impurities, tin, ammonia, and nitrates that burn the grass. So it's it very much is a volcanic rock. And although we've spent a lot of dollars trying to find, and we've engaged the best geologists in the world to do this, trying to find a similar rock closer to home. So we've tested rock in Canada, Slovakia, Scotland, Italy, you name it. The only rock we found was a rock quite close to our existing mine. So it's a rock that is native to the mineral-rich continent that is Australia. And it's all to do with the speed that the rock has cooled at over millions of years. It's got this special ability that binds the impurities in the water to the rock itself. So it acts like a sponge.
But what's confusing to me about that, Karina, as you say, the impurities in the water, and I thought, well, she must have misspoken. She must have meant the impurities in the urine, but you don't mean that. You mean the impurities in the water. You're saying there's ammonia and tin in the water?
Yeah, and nitrates. And the less impurities into the dog one end, the less impurities out the other end. I mean, raw red meat diets will have a lot of nitrates in there, in the protein within the meat. So you just need to kind of up your dosage, because that type of diet will contribute to urine burn patches. But if it's fresh and good red raw meat, it shouldn't have too much of an impact. What we say is that every dog, every household, every situation is different. And once you've worked out what works for you, you shouldn't get burn patches. And Dog Rocks works in about 9 out of 10 cases. So it's got a pretty good record. And there's no change to the pH balance of the pet's urine. And that's another thing that we're really proud of and makes our product a really lovely product to use. Well,
because it really doesn't change the dog's metabolism. It changes what comes in and what goes out. Because the pH has something to do with bladder stones and kidney stones. So you wouldn't want to be in a position of saying, well, your lawn looks great, but your dog needs surgery, obviously.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but I guess that could happen. So who was the person? How did this – I mean, this is going to sound funny, but did everyone in Australia, they had beautiful green lawns and there were no burn marks, and it turned out that, I don't know, somehow things have been purified by the rock? Obviously, that isn't the case. But how did this get discovered?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's one of those old wives' tales from Australia that actually worked, and it's very much a kind of family story. So our very close friend and, in fact, partner, a guy called Andrew, is married to a lady called Robin, whose best friend is a lady from Australia. And she'd been using this, because I think her gardener had recommended it.
How funny.
She'd been using it. And, you know, the gardener must have known as an old wives' tale that this is a product that works. So she did a lot of research with different hardness and softness of water, different water bowls, different areas of the country. She did all sorts of tests on her dog, had Ludwig dog Max, who's pretty elderly now but still alive and thriving. And she found that not only did it stop the urine burning her grass, but it also provided Max, her dog, with a cleaner source of water. And, you know, he's a pretty good age now. I think he must be at least 14. And so, yeah, it was really very much a sort of word of mouth or old wives' tale that worked. And then my husband and I used it ourselves as well in the UK market and really enjoyed working or using the product and thought there was an opportunity to get into the pet industry, which is an industry that I've always, you know, been fond of because I've had many pets myself as well. So it's sort of just grown from there. And then the opportunity to take it to the States was glaring us in the face. And I was really excited in 2012 to introduce it to the North American market. And, you know, we've got an amazing bunch of loyal customers that come back. And I love meeting our retailers and our consumers and, you know, dealing with fellow pet owners on a daily basis.
And what you basically have is something that is a one-off. It's not like, oh, yeah, they're one of those products that makes the dogs pee not burn the lawn. This is the product. I mean, and it's funny because you say product, but it's really just a naturally occurring rock that gets quarried. So it's just something from the earth. It's not something that's, I don't suppose, manipulated by man, not, right? I mean, there's
not three, in the slightest.
Three big rocks in this package. And I did think that it was the dog's pH that must change because we none of us really understands, you know, metabolism all that well, or none of us tends to pee on the lawn much, so we don't really think of our own urine having an ill effect on something. And it was just one of those things it never crossed my mind that it's something that you could change until I first heard about dog rocks. And America seems the perfect place because we're so suburban and we all have our patch of grass and our lawn and people ride around on their lawn mowers and put, unfortunately, massive amounts of chemicals and fertilizers, which are basically weed killers, which are toxic to dogs and to children, I might add, to make the lawn look greener. But we're just talking about trying to have the most natural, healthy lawn you can. And not have it look horrible.
Yeah, but I think that's our raison d'etre. I think the reason this is such a lovely solution to work with is because I know it sounds corny and it might sound a bit naff, but really, we're spreading the love. We are bringing a lovely natural solution to fellow pet parents. And I go to bed at night and I work with an amazing team of people and I literally know we're spreading the love. And my kind of baby that I've nurtured is helping people to enjoy their pets and their grass and backyard and garden more. And as you say, that, you know, you can rest assured that your pet isn't treading on chemicals because this product will, or this dog rocks will stop the urine from burning with grass in the most natural way possible. I love being involved with it.
Oh, that's really sweet. It is sappy, but you know, sappy isn't a bad thing. I think sappy drives a lot of female energy. You know, we are kind of maternal and touchy-feely and warm and fuzzy by our nature. So yeah. If that's what makes you feel good to have something which was unlikely and you've made it into such a big business success, I think it's more than warm and fuzzy. I think it's pretty impressive because you have to tell a story and you have to tell it to the stores that want to sell it and then to the people that want to buy it. So there's really quite a big challenge for something that no one ever really thought there was a solution to that problem that I know of other than, as you know, down on your hands and knees scratching at the yellow patches. I'm a little surprised at your enormous success in Europe because I saw you're also very big in Italy and having lived there on and off my whole life. I don't think of Italy as a place where people have lawns. In fact, when I installed one in Tuscany, it was the wonder of the neighborhood. They'd never heard of a lawn. Well, they didn't understand. What do you mean? You're growing this grass just to cut it and throw it away? Like, where are the sheep? Where are the goats? What are you talking about? Where's the crop? Now, things may have changed a lot, you know, over the decades, and everybody wants to, I guess, be in some weird way like the America they see on TV, so maybe there's more lawns. But is there some other reason the Italians are embracing it other than lawns, which really aren't all that prevalent?
Well, it does help with kind of box hedge or shrubs. So for instance, if you've got a male
right.
dog, so we've got we've got terriers, and they will pee all over our box hedge, and they used to kill it. And you know how box hedge is so difficult to
yes.
grow. Shrubs as well.
I
you know,
see.
We moved in when my babies were babies, both my pet babies and my children babies, and we grew our house, grew our babies, and our pets got older as well. And, you know, our shrubs would not have survived if we hadn't used dog rocks. So I should think the Italians, who are, as you say, more kind of ornate
yes.
and perhaps a little bit keener on growing hedges than grass, yes, I think
see.
That's why it is so popular. I mean, Germany as well.
Yes.
Also, the other thing is people used to grow a lot of vegetables. Well, as the world, believe it or not, becomes a little bit wealthier generation by generation, I think people are growing less vegetables, and we're relying on producers to grow vegetables, and we're buying vegetables. So those vegetable patches perhaps
right.
are being laid down to grass. But just to touch on a point you made in the previous conversation, it's not me as a woman that sold the product. I can assure you of that. It's the product. And I know it's sappy, and I'm so sorry, but really it's the product that sold the product. And it's word of mouth. And you can put that on social media nowadays, but it's really word of mouth. You know, people's personal recommendations. And I think, you know, the fact that we say it's not going to work for everyone, it's only going to work for 9 out of 10, you know, we're very upfront and open and honest with our expectations, and so hopefully everyone else is as well. And
and even if it only helps,
anyway.
You know, even if it makes the patches half as big or half as deadly, it's still an improvement. I have a question, though. It says on the packaging, just top up the water daily. Well, I have to empty the water bowl at least twice a day because these girls, well, one of them, believe this or not, talking about Sappy, she won't drink water that someone's already drunk from, including herself. She doesn't like the previous saliva in it. So she'll stand there patiently waiting for someone to notice, could you please give me fresh water? The other reason is that they're constantly digging and hunting. So when they drink, all kinds of debris falls out of their mouth, you know, plant matter and dirt and what have you. So am I wasting the good dog rock water that's been seeping in there like a kind of a soup? And should I pour off the clean water, as it were, and just clean out the bowl and then put that water back in with fresh water? I just want people to use it correctly, including me.
Oh, there are so many ways. Thank you so much for bringing it up. Your doggy sounds like a cat.
Oh, yeah.
Because so many cats are like that, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They're little fussy.
A little bit.
No, I completely get that. I mean, as I said, every dog, every household, every situation is different. And once you've worked out the, in inverted commas, dosage
right.
that works for you,
right.
I use that loosely because it's not a chemical,
right.
Then you should be fine. But with your particular case, what I would do actually is, because you're using a lot of, or your dogs are consuming a lot of water, I'd have a pack of rocks in a pitcher of water.
Oh, right.
And I'd have them in your water bowl as well.
Right.
So that you've got a continual supply of, in effect, and again, I use it loosely, treated water. Loosely, because dog rocks is not
right.
a chemical.
But what it's done is
dosing,
basically filtered. It's naturally filtered
yeah.
or neutralized
yeah.
or whatever word we want to use. That's a great idea. So you're not filling it directly from the tap each time. You're filling it from the jug, and then into the jug you put more water, so it
Correct.
Kind of steeps. I
yeah.
think of it as kind of like making sun tea, you know, where you can make iced tea by just putting the tea bags in plain water and then having them be in the sun. Same idea, that it kind
yeah.
of absorbs
yeah. Yeah.
whatever's in there.
Exactly. Exactly. God, Tracy, thank you so much. That's exactly
Perfect.
It. What a great analogy.
Perfect. Well, we've run out of time, Karina, but I have to say I am dying to see the results of this, because I just want to be yet another voice saying, isn't this cool? Anyway, even if, like, let's say that with my girls, for whatever reason, the yellow patches still appear, I know that they've had cleaner water, more filtered water, so I'm all good with that as well. Thank you so much.
Bless you. Please stay in touch.
Absolutely.
Let me know.
I will do, and I'll let everybody else know as well. And congratulations on Dog Rocks. I think it's a tremendous story, and I really do think you might have been the one doing the selling. Rocks are not very good at selling themselves. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure.
Bless you. Good
Take
to speak.
Care. And you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all for listening. Kiss your kitties, hug your pooches, and we will talk again next week. Bye for now.